Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and John O'Bacon. Episode 108 for February 11th, 2010. Enrique Bastos. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers free Libra and open source software. Our free Libra and open source fellas are here, starting with my good buddy, Randall Schwartz, who is at Stonehenge.com. His Twitter handle is M-E-R-L-Y-N. Perl programmer and small talk programmer extraordinaire. Hello, friend. Hello, Randall. How are you today?
Hey, Leo. Good to talk to you again. It's always nice to be able to have these little chats together and bring really cool people from all around the world.
Before we introduce our guest, let me say hi to John O'Bacon, who's also here.
Oi, oi. How's it going, Leo?
Community manager at Ubuntu, the author of The Art of Community, a great book that's available now on bookstores everywhere, as well as Amazon.com. And he is...
Forward.
Yeah, great forward. I read that forward all the time. Just to check to see if I misspelled anything. And his handle on Twitter is J-O-N-O-B-A-C-O-N.
Anticipation of that last
one. Wasn't that dramatic? Don't you like that?
I didn't know what it was going to be. I was thinking it could be an
N. It was the dramatic conclusion.
Anticipation. it's going to be one of those shows, isn't it? I think it is.
Yes.
It always is.
Actually, today we're going to Brazil. Which is
we
great.
We are going to Brazil, but only by Skype. Unfortunately, I was going to book the plane, the big Twit jet.
Oh boy, would I like to go
down there? That would have been cool, but no, but no.
You've been to Brazil not a few times.
Six, seven.
Jeez,
eight times.
What do you go down there for besides the beach?
Warmth, caipirinhas. You know the whole normal.
No, but I mean, isn't there like a conference or something?
Yeah, I'm actually the official reason down there is the FISLE, which is the big open source conference. In fact, we talked to
what is
Fernando?
Oh yeah,
Fernando
yeah.
Yeah, we talked to Fernando Wyden, who's one of the coordinators for FISLE, on a show, I think, about almost 2 years ago. Have we been running that long now?
Yeah.
I guess we have.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, easily.
So we talked to Fernando. She's one of the community managers there. But who we have today is another person who is big in open source, huge in open source, but in Rio de Janeiro, which I visited a few times as well, hung out on the beach there, went up to see the big Christ on the hill and stuff like that. But... his name is, I'm probably going to pronounce it wrong, Enrique, something like that, Enrique Bastos. And he apparently is big in the Python community in Brazil. He's also, I guess he's speaking internationally, he's speaking at PyCon coming up in a few weeks here in the U.S. But we're going to have him on to talk not only about PyCon a little bit, and we're also going to talk to him about open source in Rio and how it's all coming about.
Well, let's get him on the line, see if Skype will cooperate. I believe we have a phone call. The long-distance operator has called. The overseas operator says we have our connection to Rio de Janeiro and Enrique Bastos. Enrique, hello and welcome to Floss Weekly.
Hello, Leo.
Thanks for joining
us. Thank you for having me here.
That's great. I hope I'm saying Rio de Janeiro wrong. How do you, just for the record, how is it pronounced?
Rio de Janeiro.
Wow. I'm dying to go. You've been there, Randall.
Yes, I've been there quite a few times, actually. I sort of stopped there on the way as I head down to FISLE or under some of the conference I went to, too. I can't remember what the other conference was, but it was over.
The only Portuguese you learned was Caipirinha.
Caipirinha, yes. Cachaça.
Cachaça. That's the liquor that Caipirinha is made out of, right?
Yeah.
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 I hear
so most of my experiences of Rio are the beaches.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, I have taught a few seminars there. I've actually done a couple of night programs there. Did I meet you? I don't know if we've met. Have we met yet?
No, actually, you met Silvestre Mergulhão and Henrique Andrade. They're friends of mine. They're from our local community, very related to open source software. You met them during FISLE.
Okay, cool. So I've met people that have met you. We're 2 degrees of separation away. And now it's even less because we're Skyping to each other.
So there you go. I have a quick question regarding this. When Randall met your friends, given the fact that he likes the beach, was he wearing a mankini or some Speedos or something more revealing? Well, I mean,
thankfully, I do not have this information.
And nobody will
ever.
It was burned from my brain.
Yeah. First burned into your brain, then burned from it. Let's hope. So why Python, Enrique? Because I like Python, but these guys are always kind of mocking me for Python.
Not I.
No, you're a Python fan. Well, good. All right.
Python.
Yeah. I can say that part of my life. That's the short answer.
How did that happen? When did you first encounter Python?
1999. I was starting my career as a C++ Windows developer. And
well, that explains a lot right there. That's all you really need to say.
Anything better than that, you would have gravitated towards.
I will explain it. And then I met Python from a friend of mine, and quickly I started to build some tools so I could do my job quickly. And it worked so well, then I started to invert. I used Python inside my applications. Then I just started to build libraries and start using Python anywhere, everywhere, anytime. And that's how I started. And I think from the so-called general purpose languages, Python has many uses. You can, and that's what impressed me most. I know people doing computer graphics and games and web developers, and you can find pretty much any kind of application applying Python to as the fundamental technologies. And this kind if you build a community using Python and make those people talk to each other, too much knowledge. You know, it's
Uh-oh. Yeah, the Skype was failing us a little earlier.
Maybe cut
there,
to you.
There he's back. Okay, go ahead. Complete that thought, because we lost you for a moment, Enrique.
What did you heard? Well, when it stopped?
We just actually the last part of it. It was just right at the end. I think you were.
Yeah, it's about the community.
Yes.
What's interesting me most in Python, if you can apply Python to a lot of projects like games and web, computer graphics, research, teaching. So when those people working with those different projects start to talking to each other in a community, you just start to learn a lot. And as Colin Winter told me last year during PyCon Brazil, Python Brazil here in Brazil, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So is Python your entry into open source? Or was it your? I mean, were you also already a Linux user, or it sounded like you're using Windows and C++ before? So was Python sort of your entry into open source?
Yes, it was. When I started to code Python, my interest in Windows was totally related to graphics, because mm-hmm. my computer and Linux, I couldn't set up the X server to start, and there weren't drivers to make things the graphic card work. So that was my main interest in Windows, how I ended up coding in Windows. But after meet Python, and I had a lot of friends doing open source already, so it was kind of an easy move.
So one of the things that a lot of people talk about when they talk about Python is the fact that it's a batteries included language. You know, there's lots of Python modules that you can load to do certain tasks, such as reading RSS feeds or, you know, displaying a web browser widget or whatever it might be. We've been hammering on this a lot in the Ubuntu community about enabling people to scratch their own itches with Python, like opportunistic developers. Is that something you use Python a lot for? I mean, there's some formalized projects that you work on, but do you use Python just to solve problems? I mean, do you write your own little custom apps that do things that sort that makes your life easier?
Well, not only them. The batteries are a great advantage because if you need to do things fast, you can do it. So Python won't be an obstacle. And to me, this is very important. I guess for the technical industry, it's important, mainly here in Brazil, where you have a lot of contractors doing Java development. And
right.
When they start to run to code in Python and deliver things faster, it's a great result. But, you know, those batteries needed to be developed.
Yeah.
So, and another thing I really love about the Python community, those batteries were not defined by a company or a corporation with specific interest. The community gathered together and they elected what they thought was better. And if on the next release of Python, if things need to change, it will change.
So moving on from that, for a lot of Python, I mean, I write Python and I love it to bits. But what I don't have as much visibility on, I know about communities that write Python applications, but I don't really know about the actual core Python community in itself. So how, if a Python programmer has something missing from one of the modules that's part of Python, can they just ask that to be included, or how does feedback go back to the people who make Python?
Well, you can mainly join the IRC channel. You can right. join the Python mailing list, and things pretty much happens right there.
Right. So people go and join the communications channels. They say this would be a cool feature to have in Python. They can either write a patch, something like that, and it's pretty open and
precisely.
That's awesome. So can you tell us about some of the projects that you work on? Some of the specific Python projects that are part of your work?
Yeah, I work mainly with Django right now. Here at MyFreeCom, we develop. Well, MyFreeCom is from my free communities. So our goal is to build software to empower individuals and small group of people. So we write mainly financial applications. Here in Brazil, we have lots of specific business rules for billing and payments and stuff like that. And we build software to people integrate their lives through our application. So to make things easier, everything on the web and stuff like that.
So these are kind of tools that any community could use. Is that kind of what you're getting at? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's focused on Brazilian rules. So
right.
any small business here in Brazil can use one of our applications. We actually now have our first application. We have built a community of more than 170,000 people to work on personal finance. Because I don't know if you guys know, but during the 80s, Brazil suffered for a long time of inflation, and 90s, the economy started to calm down and people start to make plans and save money. But it's a new culture here in Brazil. So our idea is to empower those people, is to instruct people how to make their lives better.
That's amazing. So what's the monetization model on that? I mean, are people contributing, donating? Is there some fees for using this? Or is the money coming from third-party sources, government sources?
Yeah, actually our commercial area start the conversation to financial companies. And since we have a big community, we can monetize as a channel, offering the best product, the best offers to our users.
Having been to FizzLake for a few years, I know that the banks are really behind open source there. So is that helping your cause?
Well, actually, here in Brazil, the government is behind open source. And this can say pretty much about what's going on here. For the last 8 years, we've saw a major increase in using open source. The government started a document to encourage all government units to use ODF as the default document model. That says a lot about how things are going here in Brazil. The banks use open source software, but they still need to assure that someone will support it and or someone will be responsible when it fails, because software do it.
Somebody to sue. Yes, it's the old adage.
Somebody to sue. Yeah, that's the.
I know that at least one of the FizzLays that I went to, a representative of the president's office was there, and the governor of the state and the mayor of the city were all at the opening day ceremonies. And I think one of the links you gave us was a video of you walking up to the president, presenting him with a Python T-shirt.
Yeah, I did it. Actually, that was a crazy day, because we made the Python Rio T-shirt here in Brazil just to surprise our friends down to Porto Alegre. Yeah. And when the president was scheduled to be there, and that changed all the security measures of the event. Things went crazy. And somehow, with help of our friends, I managed to take a T-shirt and give it to the president. It was very cool.
Took it right past all the guys. That's pretty funny. That's great. I don't think I'd be presenting anything to Barack Obama anytime soon. So this is really amazing.
No,
well,
that guy to his right really doesn't look happy about it either. He's giving you the eye.
Yeah, he was happy.
Oh, good.
Because
right.
I had to do a one-liner to give the T-shirt to the president, because I knew I wouldn't have too much time to say something to him. And I just told him about...
Your one-liner wasn't in Perl, I hope.
Well, actually, my one-liner was compromised with Python. So we have here what we call Python kernels. And it's pretty cool. It's a open source circus. We visit all the universities around Rio de Janeiro to teach about open source and gather students. We really believe that the students should be the focus to make our community grow. And we do this. It's every edition. It's a surprise. Things are pretty amazing. Sessions full every time we do a Python campus. And I told the president about the Python campus, that we use open source software to integrate the students to the industry. And he just liked it.
I thought you were going to say, they went up to him and he said, "Mr. President, have you heard of the Schwarzian transform?" I thought that would have been a great thing. Yeah.
Is that where Randall switches out of his thong into the mankini? Is that the show?
Yummy. Thanks for that. Oh, I would be dining out on
not
that
good.
Therapy for the next
show, not edited for content. We can already tell.
Hey, you know.
Oh, my God.
So what is the state then? I mean, I kind of know the answer to this anyway, but it seems like open source is really making huge inroads in government particularly, but also in business in Brazil overall, but in Rio particular. And I know you have a lot to do with community building within Rio. Could you describe some of the particular activities you're doing to make that happen?
Yeah, actually, we're focusing mainly the students. That's the first step.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can find here lots of software factories. And they have a kind of business model, and they sell maintenance. They do a software, deliver it, and how can I say? They just make the user depends on the maintenance. Open source software here in Brazil, we're investing a lot on it because if I'm a small company, like MyFreeCom is focused on small companies. If I'm a small company and I use a software, let's say, from Microsoft, I'm not mm-hmm. talking about international politics. I'm talking about pure economy. The price is set in US different from here in Brazil. R$1 costs $2.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, it's the inverse. $1 takes two reais.
Yeah, I was just gonna say it's the other way around.
It's pretty expensive. You know, it's pretty mm-hmm. expensive. So if a small company needs to pay the double to have the same software just because of a license, it can be hard to grow. And with free software, if the students practice free software, they will learn. They will learn how the code actually works, and they can maintain and build those companies in reais. And that's the whole point in open source software, mm-hmm. An economic point.
And then also, from what I understand, if the software isn't available in Brazilian Portuguese, you know, to be able to translate software so that it can be used by people who don't speak English is also really useful to have.
Yeah, and the majority of our society don't speak English. Let's face it, and it's important to communicate. And things need to target the end culture, not just translate the word. You know, it's pretty hard.
You can't just run it through Google Translate. That doesn't quite cut it. I know.
Yeah,
I tried going the other way.
I guess I had to do it. And yeah, it's not enough. It's not enough. In order to deliver value, real value, you need to care about your customer. You know, it's what matters.
So you're starting with the students, and yep. you're working your way up. And what kind of activities do you have? I understand you have small conferences, you have evening meetings, that kind of thing?
Well, all started the right way, in a bar.
Or a caipirinha.
yeah. Not caipirinha. Here, we like a lot beer. Yeah,
okay,
beer is what we like most here.
Chop it.
And Silvestre and Henrique, they love it. Mm-hmm. And we started a group named Hora Extra. Hora Extra means overtime, like when you need to crunch at work. And our meetings started on Monday. We set it to Monday because Monday is the best day to do overtime. Because you just go to work, it's Monday, so your client won't call you. You call home and say, honey, I need to overtime. The weekend was crazy. And you go to the bar and take some beers and have a nice chat with your friends. And this is, it's incredible how many ideas emerge from a table with beer. You know, it's just incredible, unbelievable.
It's not amazing to me, but go ahead.
It's not amazing to you. Okay. I heard some of the stories.
It's true.
Wow, your reputation is international, Randall.
My reputation is international.
That's really amazing. Yeah.
United States of Randall.
It's Randall's world. We just live in it.
Yeah. And we started to... Our idea was, well, I like open source. I love open source. I want to work with it. I want to... not only read the manual, but when the code crashes, I need to go down there as a programmer and fix it. And but if you agree, if you're an individual, it's hard because you need to work, you have time, you have your schedule, etc. So I started to build a group that liked the same stuff. And that's when the ideas came up. We then we had so many overtimes, so many hora extras meetings that we needed to make our lives match to each other. So we started a party named Framps Party. And it's a family party. You take your kids, you take your wife, you take your family, and we just get together and talk because we're friends at all. And they have the opportunity to hear the same stories from every wife, so they can know for sure that we were at the bar on all the, those Mondays. And with that, we started to, hey, it's cool to make more than one meeting, so let's make some tech talks. And we had the Hack Framps. And the Rio de Janeiro community, the Python community, Python Rio, hosted the Python Brazil in 2008. And it was huge. It was incredible. More than 400 people.
Wow, that's awesome.
Went. Yeah, it was incredible. And it was 10, 15 guys organized everything. It was crazy. And we started to know each other and talk. And we started the Python campus. Last year, we went to 4 universities. More than 200 students went to those sessions. And it's a full Saturday of open source. Anything related to open source, they interest the audience. We care about the audience. We don't care about talk about technology. And, hey, look, I can do a crazy least comprehension and you can't understand it. No, no. What do you want to hear? And we will research it, find someone that can speak about it, and we take this to you so you see, wow, open source is cool. I want to join this group. And that's happening.
So it sounds like, you guys are doing some really, really wonderful work in spreading awareness of Python and open source over there in Brazil. Are similar things happening with other languages? I mean, you know, it's obviously Randall's a big Perl fan, and there's people writing in C sharp and C and things like that. Are similar kind of efforts happening with other languages too, or is it mainly Python?
Well, here in Brazil, we have a different kind of group because I'm a Pythonista. I work with Python. I prefer Python, but I worked with C++ and I like it too. And Silvestre, that our common friend, he's a Ruby developer. He's a Railer. Mm-hmm. And we have PHP, we have Java, we have .NET, we have, actually, we built what we call the cloud community, because if you think of a community, you think of a group, then you think about the members of the group. But this kind of cloud community, we think ourselves like a graph. And every person has many interests. And so from there, we build lots of different kinds of communities or meetings with different interests. And that's how things is going. And it's been crazy here.
And have you seen, with the work that you've done with Python as one such example, have you seen a lot of take-up? Have you seen people kind of... I mean, certainly from my experience, when I've talked to people about Python, when they start with it, they're like, wow, I didn't realize programming could be so easy. And they're kind of surprised that they can do stuff. Have you seen that in your experiences over in Brazil? Have you seen people kind of really getting excited about Python?
Yeah, pretty much. Wow. Every talk, every event I go, I try to small workshop, because nowadays people just take their laptops and take to the event. So whenever I can find the audience, we do a small Python workshop, and those that don't program yet, they get really impressed about how easy it can be. And Bruce Echo already told it. He said, Python fits your mind. It fits your brain. And that's incredible.
That is interesting. As you're talking about all these different groups and the cross-pollination, I'm so comparing it with what happens in the U.S. where we sort of silo ourselves. You know, the Perl people and the Python people probably never show up at the same meeting unless it happens to be OSCON, where there's everybody represented. I'm wondering if it isn't something about, say, American culture versus Brazilian culture, because one of the things going between the two, I can really see that, you know, Brazilians love to have fun together and be together and share whatever they have. And I know that as you're describing, that you would just, you know, impromptu would get up and start describing something. Here in the States, we'd be like, oh, no, I've got a plan for giving a presentation. I've got to have my 47 slides already made, and I've got to rehearse it 3 times. And is that your experience of us coming down there, too? Is that we're weird in that way?
So, sorry, your question just went off the Skype. Can you repeat, please?
Yeah. Is that your experience of Americans coming to Brazil? Is that we're sort of weird that way?
Well,
be careful. We might not ever come back.
Probably. There is a component about our culture here. Probably. Mm-hmm. But I once thought about it when I had to explain to Jacob Kaplan-Moss. He came here last year. Mm-hmm. What we are doing, and I guess it's related to the purpose of the meeting, you know. Over time, mm-hmm. What's the purpose of doing hora extra? The purpose is to have fun and chat about technology with beer. That's the purpose.
Yeah,
it's not to talk about Python or talk about Ruby. It's about technology. It's about people. And the Python campus, what's the purpose? It's about the student. We're focusing the student. Okay, I can't talk about Rails. I will talk about Python. But mm-hmm. we have people talking about CouchDB and stuff like this. You know, talk about Ruby, about Lua. Well, Lua was invented right on the other corner. And the focus of the meeting says a lot about how people will join the group. What's the mindset? Could you find something about the Dojo Rio group? I think I sent you a link. The Dojo, it's about Coding Dojo. Do you guys know this? Coding Dojo?
No. I've heard of it. Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
It's unbelievable, because the Coding Dojo, we have a Coding Dojo here, the Dojo Rio group. We get together to code, and no matter what the problem we're trying to solve, the process of solving the problem is our goal. So we focus PDD, solid modeling, object orientation programming, and all this important stuff that you probably won't have time to research during work. You need to take a class or something like this. We focus on during the dojo. So any language that supports those process mm-hmm. can be used during the dojo session. So we have dojo in Java, in PHP, in Python, Ruby. And I'm waiting Randall here to do something pro. Mm-hmm.
Sometime soon, probably. Next time I get down there.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, because you're focused then on the process. You're focused on the what makes because in all those languages, right? There's a commonality that allows you to do roughly the same sorts of things. You know, it's like I used to tell people that when I shifted from being a writer to being an engineer, that it was 90% the same job, and it was just the last 10% is in what medium do I express myself? And the same thing's true about programming languages, is that 90% of programming is the same no matter where you're at. So it's really fascinating to get to talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's about how you arrange things. You know, it's about fill the system with some patterns and not as design patterns, but things need to be. You need to search the harmony of the of your project, of your code, and there are many ways of doing this. Each language has the way it's easier or harder or better or worse, and you need to experience it. You can't know it before you try it, and the dojo focuses on that process, and that's what's making we have a group. The Dojo Rio is up about more than a year and 2 months, and we had every Wednesday we had a session. Only holidays and carnival we had it, because and the group went from 2 people to almost 20 each session. And every barcodes, the code, anyone owns the code. Code is the group owns the code. And 5 minutes to program. Do your programming following the collective decisions. During that 5 minutes, you write your test. When the test is read, no one can talk. You and your copilot only talks and talk louder because the audience needs to hear and understand what you're doing. And when the test passes, things get green. And then we can interact and say, "Hey, I think that's better. I think that's another strategy you probably didn't see." And then you go to the refactoring process. And each step, like those with those baby steps, you see in front of your eyes the solution evolve, and that's pretty neat.
Yeah, that sounds incredible. I know a lot of the problem is that, you know, especially in the sort of mill that we have here, just churning out programmers, we learn a lot about the basics and very little about the art of programming. And it sounds like you're addressing that much more directly. And I'm sure that has people get more excited about programming, because there is an art to it. It's not just all science, not just all playing by the numbers.
Yeah, actually, Donald Knuth said that that intuition we have about programming, the intuition is art. And when you study this intuition and its process enough, you start to be able to explain it to other person. And that's how you build science. That's his definition. And it's two faces of one coin.
Now, did these dojo ideas come out of the dojo's been done around the world, so you just brought that locally to Rio, but did that come out of these Monday night beer sessions? Is this more of where your brainstorming happens?
Actually, it came out. I met Rodolfo Carvalho. He's now in Portugal. And he was passionate about the idea of the dojo, and we've met at the first Python campus. Hello?
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Oh. Still here.
Sorry, my Mac just... Okay. We met just at the first Python campus, and he started to sell the idea of the dojo. So when it took me some time to be able to visit the dojo session, but then he went to an hora extra, and I was in debt. So... the next Wednesday, I went and we just started to think how to grow, to make things grow and invite more people and start to talk with professors and stuff. And now we more than 200 people know the Dojo-ryu, experienced the process of the Dojo-ryu in 1 year.
So what advice, I mean, we've talked about a lot of different things in this call, but what advice would you have for people in other areas to be able to get to the level of success that you apparently have? Like community builders, what sort of things would you have to say to them?
Well, probably you can ask something to Jono here, but...
he's had his say already.
Okay.
I want to hear your view on it.
I'm kind of new at this, and we've been discussing this a lot, because as soon you get visibility, like being here right now, things can be complicated. And we stated that our coin is trust. So if anything that can put the trust we have in each other at risk, we just won't do it until we discuss and make things clear. That transparency is what empowers trust, and this is very, very important in my opinion. Very, very important, because I know a lot of communities with owners, and when they start small, but when it starts to grow and you can point an owner, then you the F word.
Mm.
And that's for me is the biggest risk.
It's a risk and it's an opportunity, isn't it? And the fact that if you can build transparency and openness into a community, then it avoids risk, but it provides opportunity for people to do the things that they want to do. And it sounds like that's exactly what's happening with the work that you've been doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone can have an idea and say, hey, I want to do Python Campus. Let's say we were invited to an event here in Rio de Janeiro called EdTed. And We just got a whole area to do lightning talks the whole day. It will be pretty cool. And the first thing, it came through me, but the first thing I did was to invite the organizers of the event and take them to an hora extra. And everybody talked and everybody decided, we decided together what was going on and what we should do. It's not a board meeting, It's nothing like this. Anyone that appears to the hora extra, they want to have some beers, will know about it. It's open and we discuss it and we decide it. And okay, we just support each other's decision. It's not that hard.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, it sounds like the work that you're doing over there is wonderful. It sounds like it's very diverse and. I like the intersection of advocacy and technology. You're encouraging people to get excited about technology, but advocating that other people advocate technology as well, and around things that they want to do. It sounds like a wonderful, wonderful ambition.
Yeah, I work the full day, so I won't have. If everything depends on me, I will be the bottleneck of our community, and that's a shame.
Mm.
So we just focus on small acts to make things work and pass it on and trust that the other member of the community will make the small act it needs and pass it on. And that's how we made our t-shirts. That's how we managed to take a t-shirt to the president. That's how we organize our events, we organize our meetings. Just focusing on small acts. What's the essential action I need to do to make things work? It's not the minimum. It's what's essential. What's
right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, it sounds like what you're doing is you're identifying what do we need to do to make this successful and focusing on smaller areas, like saying, what we need to do is we need to focus on growing awareness in regional parts of the country, and then that meshes together into a community that can then have a national impact as well.
Yeah, and since we travel a lot around Brazil to other events, I went to 4 Ruby meetings in other states, and whenever I can, I just go there and organize an hora extra meeting and drink with everybody. We talk, we learn with each other, and now we have hora extras in another state too. And the same thing's happening with Dojo Rio, and the same thing will happen to Python Campus, and that's the way things are passed. And what is good will be passed on.
Yeah.
That is one of the things I was discovering about the spread of the Pearl Monk meetings. You know, the flagship one of those, of course, was every month in New York. The group would get together there. And from there, the model of having at least a social meeting every month, if not having also a technical meeting as well, spread all over the world, essentially, from there. Thanks to the fact that I was traveling all around, and I was able to stop by all these different cities and kind of encourage local groups to get started. One of the things that I think, and I think you sort of got to this, but I want to make sure I understand this if I do, is that I found that the cities that stopped having just social meetings, like if they couldn't have a technical meeting, if they couldn't have a presentation, they actually didn't have a meeting that month, which didn't make any sense to me because it destroys the rhythm. And it sounds like you guys are meeting every Monday and you're doing the dojo every Wednesday. There's like some regularity to that so people can learn to expect what's happening. And that there's a social aspect to the thing on Monday, the after hours thing. I think that channels well with what I discovered about the success or failure of Pearl Monk groups around the world.
Well, everybody, I think the problem is that everyone wants the right answer, you know? Mm-hmm. So I will attend to a meeting, and you are the speaker, and I will learn something extremely valuable from you. And that will make the difference in my life, you know. Well, okay, you can say it to me, but what you know, what you've experienced, can't be taught in words. Mm-hmm. And people need to understand this. So we focus on social meetings, and I think that's why things are going so well. And of course, we're geeks, we're nerds, we love technology. My personal card says, my web blog says, I'm a passionate software developer. Yeah, I want to do it for my whole life. I never wanted to be an astronaut or something like this. With 8 years older, I decided, no, I will develop software. And mm-hmm. here I am. No, this is pretty important because it's the process of living. I talk about a lot about things that look like philosophy. I talk a lot with my fiancée because she studies, how can I say, is anthropology mm-hmm. and sociology. It's her area. And whenever I say, hey, looks what happened, and I tell her a story, etc. And she say, "I guess I know a book about this." And she just point a book that some guy 300 years ago studied, some kind of group that was pretty well succeeded because they were focusing on people, you know. And that's it happened so much with me that. Now I just believe, okay, let me focus on people. Then I will see how things, how to change anything if it's needed, and et cetera.
Hmm. Well, it's obvious that your passion is here in this current conversation. And obviously it's what's driving your work as to be a catalyst your particular actions are affecting thousands, if not tens of thousands of other people. And I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate that you're doing that on an ongoing basis. And I'm really glad we could speak to you today. So hopefully you'll be inspiring people all around the world with what you've been able to do in Rio. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Enrique. I thank you thank for you. Having me.
Yeah, really great yeah. stuff. Yeah, it is inspiring, isn't it?
It's a great story, yeah.
Thank you, Enrique.
Thank you, Leo. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
That's neat. Nice young kid. He's like 15 years old, so that's what I really find amazing.
Is he really?
No. He looks like it, though, doesn't he?
Oil of Olay.
Yeah, oil of Olay. It's amazing. That's what you use, right, Jono?
Every day I bathe in the stuff. Yeah. I'm actually 92 years old, but no one knows.
It's incredible. Truly amazing. So I guess we gave out a number of links, but we'll put some more links in the show notes so people can sure. Because he sent us a ton of them.
Yeah, it's just he's all over the map down there. I mean, I was reading the rundown that he gave me a couple days ago, and it was just I gotta go check this out, I gotta go check that out.
Right.
I was reading through all the stuff, and unfortunately, some of it's in Portuguese. But thank God, Google Translate sort of makes a good hack at it, so I can start to read some of that. I have a little Google search for my name and for Floss Weekly and for the books that I write, and occasionally it'll pop up, especially if I've been to a conference in Brazil. And so there's like a blog posting that mentions something.
It's going to be frustrating when somebody talks about you in a language you don't understand.
Yeah, well, no, I just push the translate to English button, and I'll make a comment back on the blog. You know, thanks for mentioning Floss Weekly, or thanks for, you know, talking about.
You got to be careful though, because you know, you could be saying your sister looks like a shovel, and you really wouldn't know, would you?
It's like I've said to people, I know just enough Spanish and Portuguese to get myself into trouble in a bar, but not enough to get me out of trouble. So that's I'm at this dangerous spot.
That's useful.
It's a good approach.
Yeah, something we all aspire to, Randall. You could say, pour me another caipirinha, but you can't say, bartender, get me a cab. I got to get hell out of here.
Exactly.
Or, I'm sorry, I didn't know that was your sister.
I didn't mean to say that about your sister. Yeah, I just said she looked nice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, dear. No, that's great. It's neat to see. I mean, he's young. I mean, you know, he's obviously a young guy and has a lot of connections. And I think you've said before that there is a really amazing open source scene in Brazil.
It's huge. It's absolutely huge. When I saw the passion of the attendees at Fizzly, and then tried to compare that to sort of the, I don't want to say this because they're getting kicked out, but like OSCON seems dry now by comparison. It seems quiet and unassuming. But at Fizzly, everybody was, you know, things were chatting. People were, you know, showing each other stuff with laptops all the time. And just, it was just an amazing event. I'm sorry I had to miss it last year, and I'm probably going to miss it again this year.
I went along to Fizzly once, and it's very difficult to tell this story without it sounding egotistical. It really just not genuine. It's genuinely not meant in an egotistical fashion. But when I went over there, a friend of mine said to me, who lives over there, she said, when you come over here, people will treat you like a celebrity, because traditionally not many open source people who are involved in, you know, fairly public open source projects such as Ubuntu tend to go to Brazil, because it's, you know, for various reasons, because it's a long way to travel or there's not that many conferences going on. And she said, people will treat you like a celebrity. And I thought, yeah, right, whatever. And I'm not joking. I was there with a couple of friends, and people would stop you when you're walking around to have photos with you. I couldn't believe it. And and I don't think that's necessarily that I'm anything special. I think it's that there's just so much excitement over there about open source. It's really phenomenal. It's an incredibly inspiring place to go to.
Yeah, I had very much a similar experience. I mean, getting, you know, the way they would pick me up from the airport and make sure I got right to my destination. I mean, not just telling me to take a cab, but like the guy would actually come and stand there and say, here, I'll take you back to this hotel now. And if you want to go eat later, just let us know. Or if you want to sleep for a while, let us know. But, you know, I got to hang out in the speaker room at Fizzly. And so there's us foreigners would sort of huddle there because it was one place to kind of be around. But it, like every time we'd walk back out of there, there'd be people like clustering around us, taking pictures, getting autographs, all sorts of stuff. It is fun. And it's a lot of fun. It just, like I said, the passion, the results that produces, the kind of sharing, the commitment, the educational abilities. It's really a camaraderie that I've rarely experienced other places. So really cool.
I'm glad
to have Enrique on. Yeah.
We like Brazil.
Yes. Please keep inviting us back. I'm sure there's great conferences to keep going to. Maybe I'll get down there again this year. So speaking of upcoming conferences, John, are you at Scale in a couple weeks?
I am. Yep. Going along. I've been going to Scale every year for the last 4 years now, I think it is. I just love that place. I love the organizers are just incredible. So, yeah, absolutely.
Are you speaking this year?
I am. Yeah. I'm going to be doing a talk. So it's going to be fun. So,
me too. Yeah. I'm doing my small talk there. So follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Merlin with a Y to get updates about where I'm going to be when I'm down there. I guess we could talk about upcoming guests, right, Leo? Is that like the right time to do that?
Well, I don't have any agenda. Yes. If you, it's your show, dude.
I guess I could run the show a little bit here. Yeah. So next week we have Sebastian Brandstrom, who is in charge of, or at least the community manager for the Symbian, the open source operating system on the, I got this wrong twice now, Nokia? On Nokias, right?
What? No? What?
That Symbian. Isn't Symbian on the Nokia?
Yeah, Symbian's owned by Nokia.
Oh, yeah.
It's owned by Nokia. It's their OS. Yeah. They've got MAMO and they've got Symbian, yeah.
I completely zoned out for a second there. I was thinking of puppies. But anyway,
puppies. I love puppies.
I do, actually.
Now I'm thinking of puppies.
A lot of help. Maybe it's just my show. Okay. Yeah.
We're not here to help you. We're here to get in your way, Randall. Didn't you know that?
Right. I can tell I'm being undercut here, you know, at the end of the
show. John, let's talk about puppies.
Yeah. Well, I actually signed up to be Randall's fluffer, but I didn't realize that.
Oh, my God.
No, not going there. Not even going to try going there. Following week, we're going to have Jamie Cameron on, who is the project lead from all the way back from the beginning of WebMin, which is an administrative tool that allows you to manage various services on your machine directly from web browsers. And he's going to be on talking about that. We also have Bill Hoffman, just added to the schedule, who's the project lead for CMake. I started seeing CMake pop up more and more in projects that needed to be built, including, I think, KDE or something like that done with CMake now? One of the big projects like that is done with CMake now. After that, we've got Carlos Puchol of Amahi, which is a home media server, firewall, you name it, it does it sort of thing for your home machines. And then Matt Ray with Zenos, a big it's a content management system, something like that. I may be wrong. I should have looked it up since last week when I also didn't know the answer. But there we go. Lots of other people coming up. Go to twit.tv/floss. You can find the upcoming spreadsheet linked from there. You can also find out how to reach me to suggest more people. But again, here's the way to get people on this show. Have the project leader email me. They go right to the top of the list. Otherwise, I put them down somewhere in the middle, and we won't get to them until 2015 or so. But the show will probably
I had two open source guys in here watching the show earlier. And they said, oh, we'd love to talk to Randall about our ERP solution. It's a lot like sugar. And I said, sure, go ahead and contact him.
Yep.
We'll be talking to you in 2020, and I'm sure you'll be doing even better by then.
No, I appreciate all the suggestions. I mean, you guys, the listeners, y'all have been very, very good for this show to be able to send me, nudge other people to talk to me about the show. Because really, you know, this show was sort of a struggle in the beginning for me, trying to schedule people in. But now, as if you go to the spreadsheet, you can see that we have 211 names there. So even if we did this daily, we wouldn't be done for a year and a half. So I appreciate the fact that there are so many good projects to talk to, so many good people to talk to. But second, that I can keep bringing this level of quality people to y'all, because it's fun for me, and the feedback I get from you guys is you're enjoying the variety of people we have on the show, and I really appreciate all that. I appreciate all the people who listen. Tell your friends about the show as well, and I'm sure they'll enjoy it as well.
So, speaking of y'all, y'all. I actually have a little thing I'd like to just get out there. There's a small conference going on called Southeast Linux Fest, and it seems like the folks who are putting it together have really got their hearts in the right place and doing a great job. So I just wanted to let people know that if you're in the area of Spartanburg, South Carolina, or if you want to pop along, then go along. It's on the 12th and the 13th of June at the Marriott Renaissance Park, the Marriott at Renaissance Park Hotel. So it sounds like I've been hearing a lot about this, and I said, you know, I'll let people know about it. I'm going to be there myself. It's going to be a fun event.
Cool.
Well, thank you both guys for joining us for this fabulous episode of Floss Weekly. I'm going to take the show back under my command now.
He's controlling the horizontal and the vertical.
Invite everybody to come visit us online at twit.tv/floss. You can subscribe there in iTunes, Zune, Winamp. I know those are all closed source, but there are also a few open source solutions that you could use. It's just a standard RSS feed, after all. You can also watch the show. We stream it live. Every Wednesday afternoon at 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern time. That's 20:30 UTC at live.twit.tv.
No, it's 21:30.
Is it? Is it plus 7 or plus 8?
It's 8 in the winter, 7 in the summer.
Okay, then it is 21:30. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. We've had this discussion now how many times?
Well, remember, because we change our time. Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay. Right. That's the problem. It's right. Different UTC.
UTC doesn't change its time.
Yeah.
Okay.
I smell a time zone dork.
No, you know what? We get a lot of email when I say it wrong, and that's why. Yeah. So we just want to make sure, because apparently there are many people who live in wherever UTC is. So.
It's the moon.
It's universally understood as a time zone that no one ever understands.
Right. Even those. Because if you're in Britain, if you live in Greenwich, you honor summertime. So
right.
It's BST. No, it's BDT. No, it's BFBR. BRB. We're done. Well, join us again next week for another great episode of Floss Weekly. Bye bye, everybody. Bye bye.